The City of Scenes podcast is brought to you by Willoughby's since 1898, New York City's boutique camera store for precision-crafted Hasselblad, Leica, and the new Lytro camera system. Visit Willoughby's.com.
Hi, I'm Catherine Oliver, principal at Bloomberg Associates.
Hi, I'm Stacey Wilson-Hunt, Hollywood editor for Vulture.
And this is the Bloomberg and Vulture City of Scenes podcast. In celebration of the Tribeca Film Festival's 15th year, we'll be speaking to leading creatives and producers behind some of the most popular TV and film shot in New York City. We'll talk everything from casting New York actors and hiring New York crews to how a singular shot was captured or how a location was scouted and secured, and ultimately how shooting in New York City was paramount to the project. Today, we're taking a close look at Gotham and what it takes to bring superheroes and villains and all their action and adventure to life in New York City.
Catherine, before we start, do you have any favorite Gotham location movies?
Well, you know, movies, growing up, I have to say that Batman and, of course, Catwoman was very near and dear to my heart. My sister had a Corvette convertible, so I fancied that I was like Catwoman. I liked to jump in and out of the car. But as an adult and as film commissioner for the city of New York, I have to say Spider-Man. We did a couple of Spider-Mans, and so, and of course, Wonder Woman. What woman doesn't like Wonder Woman? How about you?
Well, I also love Spider-Man because I was actually a grad student at Columbia when they were shooting those scenes, so I felt very connected to Peter Parker.
Well, hopefully we're going to see more and more superheroes running around the streets of New York City, thanks in part to one of the showrunners of one of Netflix's most buzzed about new show and a second Marvel adaptation, Jessica Jones.
Yes, we are so thrilled today to be joined by Melissa Rosenberg, the executive producer and creator of Jessica Jones. Melissa, it's very nice to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
Well, thank you for making time for us. So before we begin diving into the show, it's interesting to think about the long history that Marvel has had and an affinity for Gotham. And we are interested to know, how did the rich history of Marvel stories and superheroes inspire your particular take on this story? And obviously, keeping in with the source material and keeping the integrity of this incredible series.
Well, that was really the root of it, is the Alias comic book series by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Gatiss. And, you know, I really was very attached to the source material and wanted to really bring that to life. And it's so part and parcel with the location in which it's written to be that I really wanted to emulate that.
Very good.
Now, winning over comic book graphic novel fans requires a lot of loyalty to the source material, and I think the fans are diligently following plot lines, and they have some high standards of what to expect on screen. You had originally developed this show for ABC. Was it always the plan to shoot on location in New York, even before it landed at Netflix?
You know, we didn't get as far as discussing location back when I was doing it at ABC. So, you know, we debated it when it came to Netflix only for the cost reasons. But ultimately, the show is so, the whole series of Marvel Netflix shows are so intertwined with New York. And the city made it easy.
How did it impact the storytelling overall? I mean, it was set in Gotham, and how did it just further enhance the whole production?
Well, we were able to take it outside of two people in a room, which can get very claustrophobic. And when you're not shooting at the location you're writing about, you end up doing that a lot. You end up being in a room and, you know, faking it. And we didn't fake anything. We spent probably half our schedule outdoors on the streets.
So reflecting on season one, which you executed beautifully, is there a particular location that you look back on and you think was the most difficult to either nail in terms of bringing it to life or also just the absolute logistics of those scenes?
Yeah, you know, it wasn't the location as much as the time of year. We were outdoors, actually seen during the pilot of Jessica being outside of Luke Cage's bar. And it was 2 a.m. and below zero, and we're having to do a stunt, and it actually became physically dangerous to do. We had to wrap early on that one because it just, you know, you couldn't put the crew or the actors
because of the cold.
Because of the ice and the cold, yeah. Wow. So that was the probably the biggest challenge, and to be shooting January, February.
Right.
But the other one was on, I think it was episode 7. There's a scene in which Jessica is on a bridge, and that was a big challenge to figure out how to do that and get that right. We shot a lot of it practically on the bridge.
And on that token, how much of what we see of Jessica's actions are stunt work versus Kristen Ritter's work herself?
Yeah, she does a great deal of stuff because, you know, we don't have the luxury as for instance, someone like Batman or Daredevil has. She didn't wear a mask.
Right.
You know, she doesn't wear a suit, so you can't put a stunt person in her ensemble.
She has a very unique, tall, lanky frame, too. She doesn't look like a sort of tough, stout, you know, stunt woman.
No, we had an incredible stunt woman who actually matched her beautifully. Hmm. But we went through a lot of them because, not only Kristen, but like 3 of her stunt women got injured. And so it was very, very intense. But man, Ritter just went for it.
She seems very fearless.
She is fearless, that woman.
Jessica's line of work has her mingling in large crowds very frequently. She sort of has to be under her hood, kind of unnoticed while she's, you know, looking at the world around her. How difficult has it been to manage all those large crowds with all those extras? And anytime I see a street scene in New York, I just keep thinking of the logistics of how many streets are they closing down? You know, how many people are sort of, you know, directing traffic and pedestrian traffic? What has that been like for you?
That is a challenge. I think because the residents are getting a little frustrated with, you know, someone shooting on their street every other day.
Right.
And I think that's been
it's not like LA where people get excited when they see something.
Well, nobody shoots in LA anymore because of the tax credit.
They're all in New York.
Right. Yeah, New York is an incredibly busy town right now.
Which
you know, makes it more challenging to find great crews because everybody's working.
Right.
So, you know, I think New Yorkers are clearly very savvy about, you know, oh, they're shooting, I guess I shouldn't look at camera, or some of them are just like, oh, I don't give a damn what you're doing, I'm walking through your set, stop me. You know?
It's all those years of Law and Order, people are just over it, right?
Yeah, I think people may be a little over it.
Most of the time people just want to know what's going on, you know, they just want to know what's happening, and then, you know, they might be a little snarky at first because they're inconvenienced, but then they get excited, and, you know, they're curious to see what's going on.
They do, especially the aspiring performers among them. and then on the same topic as managing crowds, you know, within this incredible community in Newark are incredible actors. Mm. And I always think about Marion Doherty back in the early days of casting, how she revolutionized what the New York actor face was. You had Jack Klugman, you had Robert Duvall. You suddenly were seeing people who look like someone you might really know in real life. So how does having access to that population of performers impact even just background artists and people you bring in for an episode here, an episode there?
Hugely impacts. That is one of the primary reasons we wanted to be in New York. I mean, certainly for the locations, but even more so for the actors. They're such a diverse group to pick from, from both in front, you know, with leads and smaller parts and background. It's really, really rich. And you find people, like you were saying, you find people who look like real people. You know, they haven't messed up their face with all sorts of, you know.
And racially diverse, too. I noticed there were some scenes in the hospital where the young woman is, you know, I don't want to ruin it for people who haven't seen it, but there's a young woman in a hospital bed. And even just a nurse who walks in, whether she's Indian or Asian, they all seem so authentically like someone you might meet in that setting.
Yeah.
It feels... Nothing against Grey's Anatomy or shows like that, the film here, but there is like this extra layer of, oh, I feel like I've been in that hospital room.
Right. That was very purposeful.
Yeah. Well, I can tell.
Hi, I'm Alec Baldwin.
I'm Gary Oldman.
Matthew Modine.
Brett Ratner.
Abigail Spencer.
And you're watching my shortlist.
Introducing Tribeca Shortlist.
There's so many good films.
Mrs. Robinson, you're trying to seduce me.
Personally curated movies by industry insiders to stream or download on all your favorite devices.
There's no crying in baseball!
Where are my pills? I need a Valium the size of a hockey puck.
Go to TribecaShortlist.com or download in the App Store. Tribeca Shortlist. Movies worth watching.
City of New York. I mean, it truly is a melting pot, and you know, that's one of the other selling points. You know, the amazing locations and exterior locations, but also the diversity of the talent pool.
Yes, absolutely.
And is there a location that you came upon in pre-production that you just thought, you know, this isn't in the script, but I love the look of this building or this particular landscape so much that you kind of integrated it into the narrative?
You know, when we would write a scene for a bank, and then it ends up we're not doing the scene in the bank, we are doing it somewhere entirely different, and so then we start designing the scenes toward the location that we love. So we did write toward locations. It was just we didn't necessarily have them in advance.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
When you're not on location, you might be using some studios for facilities, you know, offices, apartments, things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the type of sets that you would build to, you know, create a consistent environment for the characters?
Yeah, we shot at a studio out in Brooklyn, and we have sets for, you know, obviously Jessica's home office is a very place we go to a lot, and Trisha's house, Trisha's apartment, and we have exteriors, practical exteriors for those. The exterior of Jessica's apartment is up, actually, the real practical location is up on the Upper West Side. But, you know, we also went to a lot of apartments, some very beautiful apartments, because we had a character, Kilgrave, who was very into views and chic surroundings. So we got to see some of the most beautiful apartments in New York City.
That's a fun part of the job. Were there certain New York City quintessential locations that you wanted to weave into or capture just as you were, you know, anticipating, you know, the season?
Well, definitely subway. We were dying to get a subway in there. And, you know, really wanting to take advantage of the city skylines. But we're not, you know, because our character... She doesn't stand on the top of buildings. She doesn't, you know, fly and such. And, you know, Daredevil is the one who stands on top of buildings. Mm-hmm. And so the series being from her point of view was always very grounded in the streets, which is why, again, I loved so much being able to cut away to Kilgrave's life. But we also, Hogarth has a beautiful office, which we shoot practically, at least the lobby, which is at the Bank of America building in Bryant Park.
Yeah. It's definitely a different version of New York than I've ever seen before, which is really cool. A scary version in some sense, and very gray. I love the colors.
Yeah.
What was the, you talked about the very cold night you spent shooting the bar scene. What other sort of weather inclemencies did you have to deal with? Because you were shooting during a very tumultuous time of year in New York. New York weather can be extremely brutal.
Yeah. at that time of year, it can be. You know, the challenge was we shot, you know, January, February, all the way through, February all the way through September. And some of the things we shot in February or March, we'd have a street scene and the trees would be bare. And then you realize you have to go back and reshoot a scene or add a scene for that episode because maybe it's short. And you go back, now the tree is fully green. So there was a special effect, leaves.
That's great.
In the mix.
Some stand-in leaves.
Yeah, stand-in leaves. Background leaves.
Now, obviously, you are no stranger to show running. You worked on Dexter for a number of years and also... became of age, I guess, to a lot of us having written the Twilight series for film. You adapted the Juggernaut book series. And actually, we spoke about this a couple weeks ago, but is there anything in you that would like to start directing on Jessica Jones?
You know, I'm not as driven toward, I'm not as pulled towards directing as I am producing, and certainly in TV. I mean, it almost feels I have more control as a producer and a writer. I think it really is a writer's medium in a lot of ways, although there are some extraordinarily talented directors, including my husband, who directs television. But I love I think that is where I feel the most creative.
And you're enjoying being welcome on set as a writer, as opposed to on film where writers are not invited to the set.
Not on a usual basis. I mean, sometimes it depends on the writer and depends on the movie. But I think
you're integral to the process now.
Yeah. I like to think so.
You are. And where are you now in terms of planning or pre-production for season two? And are you anticipating any changes or things that you've learned after doing one season that will impact the next?
Yeah, we're just getting ramping up again, so I don't actually know what we're doing, but I there are some things that I want to do better. I'm always learning from my experience. I like to think so. And I think, you know, one of the things is that I work the hell out of Kristen Ritter. I mean,
poor thing is in almost every scene, isn't she?
Every scene, yeah. And, you know, that's one of the challenges when the show is called Jessica Jones or back when it was Dexter. You know, you really have to earn those secondary storylines with your other characters. And I think that was so much of what season one was, is building up the ensemble. And so season two, hopefully we'll be able to utilize them more.
Give Kristen a day off now and
then. Like every 3 months. So it would be nice to give her a day off.
What is the timeline for production? You know, you go into the writer's room, you're brainstorming ideas for this season, and then what? Can you talk a little bit about the process of developing the scripts and then delivering them as part of the pre-production process?
Yeah, sure. You know, we have the luxury, the extraordinary luxury of writing a good many of them before we even start prepping. Hopefully all of them, but we'll see how that pans out. So that's an incredible gift, because in most cases you're writing while you're prepping an episode, while you're actually shooting another one, and while you're posting another one. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to do any one of those jobs well when you're split four different ways. So it's great to just focus on story and writing for many months. And then we'll start prep, probably beginning somewhere in 2017.
And, you know, congratulations on being, you know, a woman in a predominantly male-dominated industry, and you're, you know, creating and supporting a show about a female superhero. It's just such a great message for other young women out there who are aspiring in the industry. And can you talk a little bit about your approach and your experiences as being a woman in a very competitive environment?
Yeah, you know, when I first started out, I was more often than not the only woman in a writing room, and always lower level read cheaper. And, you know, my agents would hear things from showrunners when they would pitch me, such as, oh, we already have a woman, you know. So that was the kind of, those are the kind of limitations myself and my colleagues, female colleagues, were up against when we first started out. Now the rooms are more balanced. Certainly my room is, and the rooms of my friends who are, you know, female showrunners. So diverse, that is also really important to me. So, you know, that's been a long road. And of course there are people before I got there that were, you know, banging down those glass ceilings. Mm-hmm. That got me further. So hopefully I bang really hard on those ceilings, and hopefully I crack enough of them that the next generation can, you know, have a little bit easier time.
So when you were growing up, was there a superhero character that was one of your favorites?
That's a good question. Superhero. I mean, I always loved them, but, you know, Kung Fu.
Not a bad one.
David Carradine. Yeah, I was a big Kung Fu fan. That doesn't really count, but it kind of was.
Well, Jessica Jones is a wonderful character. We wish you continued success with the show as you get ready for season two. Next time, we'll be back speaking with Courtney Kemp Agbo, showrunner and creator of the hit drama Power on Starz. Thanks for downloading this episode of City of Scenes, a co-production of Bloomberg and Vulture, both proud supporters of the Tribeca Film Festival. And be sure to catch the 2016 Tribeca Film Festival running from April 13th through April 24th. For more information and tickets, visit tribecafilm.com/festival. I'm Catherine Oliver, and you can follow me at KOliverNYC.
And I'm Stacey Wilson-Hunt, and you can find me on Twitter at GalInHollywood. Thank you so much.
The City of Scenes podcast is brought to you by Willoughby's since 1898, New York City's boutique camera store for precision-crafted Hasselblad, Leica, and the new Lytro camera system. Visit Willoughby's.com.